Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me, as always, is Fred. The world is cold. Better drip your faucets, Moreland. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Just coming up with alternate lyrics for Eddie Kingston's theme song. You know, just thought I'd, you know, the world is cold. Better make sure you have, you know, salt for your sidewalk. The world is cold. This bit isn't very good.
The world is cold. You better have a tea kettle.
Yeah. World is cold. Bundle up by getting on your blanket and playing Animal Crossing for 4 hours.
The world is cold. Go buy a snowboard.
Yeah. Could you imagine Eddie Kingston snowboarding?
Eddie Kingston snowboarding reminds me of playing 1080 on.
Yeah, that's some more back in the day.
Yeah,
he would be a great SSX tricky character.
Oh, he would be a great SSX tricky character. But
even though this chronologically doesn't make any sense, we're starting the campaign to get Eddie Kingston an SSX tricky. Sign our petition.
Yeah, I know. It's fun. Odie decided. So we story time. We bought him this Bully Make box, which has got like toys for. It's toys for really tough chewers. It's made for like bully breeds. Odie's kind of a bully breed, but he's not really. But he's a very tough chewer. So we got him one. And then he bit off this piece of like, it's like almost like nylon fabric. It was about 2.5 inches long, folded in half. He chewed it off and he swallowed it. So
hell yeah, brother.
I know. I can't. He's pooped out some pretty wild things. And he's never had any issues. So we're going to monitor him and make sure he's okay. But man, this dog, I swear, unless it's like a big hunk of literal plastic that can't be chewed off, you can't trust this dog to chew any toy. It's nuts.
My in-laws got us the calendar gimmick, but for cat toys. An Avid calendar, but nice. Cat toys. Most of them are just little like stuffed doohickeys that like, hey, it's candy cane shaped, and we printed the candy cane on it gimmicks. But there are two just little springs, and my cat Mavis is obsessed with them, and will play fetch with them like it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to her. So I would not be shocked if that ends up happening. Although she always ignores the show. Like I was up here doing a lot of work yesterday and she kept running in with her damn spring type thing. It looks like a slinky, only it doesn't slink. And it's tiny. It's other than all those different ways, it's exactly like it. But she just kept running in this damn room with it, and I guarantee she's not gonna pop in here for the next 2 hours.
Well, you know what? We're always welcome for a run-in from the Hungy cat, because the Hungy dog already borked because the Amazon guy dropped off our millionth Amazon package. So I swear.
You know, it's a service.
The amount of boxes I have that are broken down in this house is astronomical, Fred. Astronomical.
Well, sometimes it'd be like that. Okay, listen, I was traveling a lot the past 2 weeks. Like, when we did the preview show last week, that was like one of the 7 hours that I wasn't sleeping or traveling that week, pretty much. So I know that some extremely dumb stuff with Nick Hausman happened, but I do not have the capacity to summarize it, but I guess we should. My summary of it right now would just be extremely dumb bullshit that isn't really, like, it's a joke. So, you know. You go ahead. Have fun.
Here's my summary of it. Nick Hausman lost a lot of credibility. He knew what he was doing, and he acted like a scummer, not a journalist. And well, that's all we're going to say on that. He's done enough damage to his own credibility, and I'll be honest, he's not worth talking about. If there are real allegations that surface, then we'll have that conversation.
Okay.
Here's the thing. These allegations could be real, but they're not being reported.
No, he didn't report anything, right? He just was like, oh, man, you know who has NDAs? And it's just like Harvey Weinstein. That's right, Chris Chirico, who I don't like. And then, like, presented no evidence that he did anything like Harvey Weinstein. And then he was like, oh, I only meant Harvey Weinstein was a bully. Because, you know, that's famously what people think of Harvey Weinstein for. And then on top of all that, like, is just like incessantly like, I haven't backed down from my initial reports. It ruined a pay-per-view match, which, I mean, frankly, the way it worked wasn't very good. But, like, you know, it led to Kylie Rae. I guess we're going to get into this more. Kylie Rae, like, did a heart emoji to a tweet that mentioned the fact that Hausman talked about this. And then a brain genius on Squared Circle, the subreddit, took a screenshot of that and was like, oh, Kylie Rae appears to corroborate Nick Hausman's report, which is wrong in a couple ways.
And, he didn't report anything. Like,
exactly. That's the thing. That was one of the ways it was wrong in. And so we're just like, we just got Nick Hausman trying to weaponize a years-old rumor about Kylie Rae that has never been confirmed. And didn't do any reporting to try to confirm it or anything else. And I don't know, man. It seems maybe I'm missing something here because, again, I was traveling a lot and I wasn't spending Christmas Day arguing with Stephen P. New on Twitter.
No. Yet.
So I don't know. This is all dumb. I hate it. It sucks. Nick Hausman is not very good at being a reporter. So,
yeah, he's really not. And it's extra frustrating because you could easily just do your job and report and ask questions.
Yeah, he got famous because CM Punk would pretty obviously give him stuff and then he'd just be his mouthpiece, right?
Yeah.
Hold on. RJ City. Dear, I am tweeting at RJ City from our podcast account. This information, thanks in advance. Yeah, there we go. I did it.
Yay. Yeah, it's
that'll go over well.
Yeah, to end the Hausman stuff, you can either be a journalist or you can be a tabloid guy.
Yeah.
And you can't be both, because if you're a journalist, you're reporting facts, you're reporting news. If you're a tabloid guy, you're running with rumors. You cannot do both. That's not how journalism works. You can frame this as a rumor and then go research it, but you can't publish unless you are able to fully prove or debunk it. Like, that's... it's journalism 101, and wrestling media needs to go to journalism 101. You have to have the facts before you go to press. You can't. It's one thing if, like, oh, there's a rumor that Mercedes Moné will debut next Wednesday on Dynamite. Okay, that's speculation. That's entertainment. Okay, fine. But it's not journalism. This is sexual assault. This is
No, it's disgusting. Legitimately disgusting what Hausman did to trivialize this.
And you know what? It makes things worse for the victim.
Yeah, for sure.
That's enough of that. The Hausman stuff can all go eat shit. Let's talk about a company that's back, baby. AEW. Bread, World's End. You know what? You know how I comp World's End? It's like Vengeance 2006.
Okay.
Yeah, you had a few good matches at the top of the card, and Peak Out is great. The rest of it really didn't matter. And by really didn't matter, it was like, it was there. It was fine. Nothing was truly offensive. But it was just kind of there. And that was one of the worries I had when we started hearing that we were going to get more and more pay-per-views. Because eventually, you're going to have these kind of issues. You're going to have situations where you just don't have as many great matches. And when you have four pay-per-views a year, it's a lot easier to have 7, 8, 9 great matches. You can't do that when you run, what was it, 5 pay-per-views in 3 months? And not to mention a big show in Arthur Ashe and a relatively big show for Winter is Coming. You can't have like these well-built great matches all the time. And that was one of the issues that WWE had running the 12 pay-per-view calendar cycle. You just can't build up enough. And I think we finally saw that come to roost. It was like a 6 out of 10 pay-per-view, which for AEW is awful considering what their standard is, but it was still good. And I'm concerned that this may become more of a habit, a more of a trend moving forward, because I mean, we're not going to get one until Revolution. So it's going to be not over 2 months, but outside of that, like what happens if they go to like a 1 a month schedule? We're going to see more of this, and it's just going to have to be a shift in our expectations.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually thought this was on paper, you know, maybe the build wasn't great. And we talked about that last week, but I thought on paper, this had the potential to be a good pay-per-view, because look, like Andrade and Miro, on paper looks like a pretty good match. The 8-man tag on paper looks like a pretty good match. Well, we didn't even get Swerve and Keith. Riho and Tony Storm on paper looks like it could have been a good match. And those all were not good matches for one reason or another. Thanks to the top three matches, really, in the opener, I thought, on the actual pay-per-view, it turned out to be there was some good stuff on that show for all, and then there were some real stinkers. And I don't know that I don't think this is really a case of too many pay-per-views resulting in a bad show, like as a direct consequence of it. I think it's just as you run more shows, it's likely you're going to have one that just doesn't come together like it should. And this was kind of that. And, you know, we'll get into the different reasons why some of these matches weren't good, I think. But I can't really attribute any of them to just, like, too many shows.
I'm not saying that too many shows make bad matches. I'm saying too many shows just won't give you as many higher-end stories and higher-end, like, builds, just because you're just not going to have the time to be able to build them up like you were with a 4 pay-per-view cycle, where everything felt like it had, outside of maybe one or two matches on like a 9 or 10 match card, felt like you had a real story going into it and you had a solid build and solid direction, where some of the stuff is unavoidable. Like I'm eliminating the 8-man tag because that was supposed to be a world tag team title match, but then Kenny Omega had diverticulitis. You can't plan for that. They adjusted as best they could. And they made chicken salad out of chicken shit. And especially when you talk about Takeshita versus Darby Allin. It's more of, you just, there could have been a better and more substantial build with some of these matches if they were given that full quarter to really build up during that pay-per-view cycle. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's not bad, but it's just not as good as it has been.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I don't know that's a real problem. Sorry, I just got distracted by the... okay, so I've done a thing where I was trying to remember who Excalibur referred to their F5 as the deep sea diverticulitis. And I was thinking it was just Brian Cage, but it turns out it was Kevin Steen prior to that. And now... And now I found a ringside news story where it is a controversy that Excalibur called it the deep sea diverticulitis because Brock Lesnar had diverticulitis, and God forbid, referencing.
I don't know, deep sea diverticulitis.
I know.
That's kind of funny. Diverticulitis is not funny. That line is kind of funny.
I don't get it.
Deep sea diver.
No, I get that. I don't get the controversy attempt, manufacturing attempt. Like, I don't even...
People have been manufacturing bullshit controversies with this company since its inception. It's just... People suck.
Yeah, it's... We live in a stupid, stupid timeline.
We really do. And it's getting stupider. Oh, did you see, Fred, that LimeWire is back?
LimeWire's back.
LimeWire, are you excited to get viruses on your computer again?
Oh, of course, it's crypto or AI, which is more or less equivalent at this point. Who could have foreseen, etc.? Oh, good Lord. Oh, my God. I just... Wish I had NyQuil.
I know.
Wish I had NyQuil right now.
We'll get you some Robitussin, and then you can.
I think this is beyond the Tussin.
All right, let's talk about this show. Yeah. I did not watch Zero Hour.
I did not either,
because I was told I actually had tickets on Saturday night to go watch the Timberwolves take on the Lakers, and I got to see the Wolves beat the Lakers, and I got to see LeBron James play live. For probably the only time in my life. So that was cool.
I'll tell you why I didn't watch it, because I was with family and acquiring an illness because one of my nephews, who is like two, just like constantly had snot coming down his entire face. So having a good time, y'all. Having a good time.
Hey, you know what? Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with being with family. We spent, I think, 12 days. My in-laws were here, and it was a lot. It was a lot, which is fine. I like my in-laws, but man, having five extra people in this house ends up being a lot. Let's talk about this show. I loved the opener. Claudio Castagnoli, Brian Danielson, Mark Briscoe, and Daniel Garcia defeated Brody King, JYJ Lethal, and Roosh. It was just a standard like G1 all-star tag. And they all just did cool shit. I gave us 4.25. It was just fun. You didn't need a story. They're all pissed off that they didn't make the block finals. And they want to kick someone's ass. Great stuff.
Yeah, I liked this quite a bit, actually. I thought this was a promising open to the show. I had heard that it was kind of a middling show, and, you know, watched this, and for a moment I forgot. I was like, all right, we're starting off hot. We're on our way. And I went 4 flat on this. I thought it was just a lot of fun. Lots of really fun interactions between these guys that is hopefully used going forward. You know, we got a little bit of that with Daniel Garcia and Swerve. You know, I guess Swerve wasn't in this match, but they were both C2 competitors. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought this was like, frankly, this is the kind of stuff AEW should do a little more of. Just like 6 or 8 man tags of like loosely affiliated people. to just do cool shit, you know?
Yeah. It was revealed after this match. Roosh, I think, put it on his Twitter account this Thursday. He tore his hamstring in the second match of the Continental Classic, and he's likely to miss some time.
No idea. I never could have told, you know?
Yeah. Well, it makes sense why it was wrapped.
Yeah.
But all best wishes to Roosh, the locker room leader, for a speedy, speedy recovery.
The ultimate professional.
It's amazing how different he is in this company versus everyone else. The Redeemer, Miro, defeats Andrade El Idolo. And this was kind of fun. It was also a little disappointing. They beat the piss out of each other, but it never really hit that next level that this really could have. CJ Perry was just kind of there. I think you could have had this match without her.
I don't think you could have, because who would have yelled at Miro about, is this what you wanted, my infected finger?
Yes, we all want to see more pictures of CJ Perry's infected finger, which we're very glad that she's okay. But
yes,
God, I could
care less. It was an odd moment, in the match. You know, I get that, you know, the whole point of this basically was to reunite Miro and CJ, while giving a Miro win over the exiting Andrade. I can't say this match was bad. I thought it was, like, you know, in that nebulous good area where I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. But if they're like, hey, how is it? I was like, you know, it was all right. It just was a big story match, I guess, with the drama with CJ in it, Miro, and then Andrade being betrayed. But it just never hit a high level of work. And it's kind of an unfortunate thing, because these two guys are good. And we didn't get a good match. And especially after Andrade, Andrade doing his thing pretty damn well in the C2. You know, we could have had better, and we should have had better, but here we are.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5. Andrade El Idolo did announce that he is officially done with his AEW contract. Now, that doesn't mean he won't ever return, but it seems like he is moving on for the time being. He also lost against Volador Jr. in CMLL. So, and at his, I believe they're married. His wife, Charlotte Flair, was front row in Arena Mexico. My guess is he's going back to WWE. He has a great relationship with Triple H, and obviously significant other works there. And that is something that apparently is a renewed, I don't know what the right word is, a renewed focus to make sure that like families can stay together when they're both wrestlers. Trinity is likely going back to WWE as well. She's obviously, I can't remember which Uso she's married to, if it's Jimmy or Jay, but she is married to an Uso, and that will obviously be viewed in the same light. So
it is apparently Jimmy. So,
well, you had a 50% chance of getting it right, so I just had you said both.
Yeah. Now, is Jimmy the one on Raw that's a babyface, or the one on SmackDown that I guess is still a heel?
It's Main Event Jay.
Okay. All right. And nobody's bitch Jimmy?
I think so. I don't know. I don't watch that company. Let's move on to something that feels like it should belong in that company. Timeless Tony Storm with Luther the Butler versus Riho. I will say, I popped hard when Tony Storm was on Luther's shoulders, and she either gave a clothesline to Riho on the apron or kicked her. I thought that was great. It was very fun.
Yeah, that was a cool spot idea. Actually just threw her off the apron to the floor. Yeah, I like that. That's a good spot. I didn't like most of this match, though. It just did not work.
It was almost like she was watching her Kofi Kingston Royal Rumble tapes and just decided to try it in this match, and I thought it was really good. Outside of that, you're right. The match was kind of a nothing match. That's what I mean. Like, some of these just never hit. And disappointing. But look, Time of Sony's your champion, and the story is going to be her versus Mariah May. And when we'll get there, I don't know. Feels like we could get there in 2-3 weeks. Feels like it could be 6 to 9 months. I think the Trish Stratus, Mickey James story was around 6 to 9 months. So my guess is it'll follow a similar timeline, but probably, you never know with Tony Khan, because sometimes it's a really big window that they work with. Sometimes he moves things along faster. We'll find out in time. But yeah, that's the story. And Riho, we'll probably see her in 6 months.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because I don't know. I think she's typically good, but man, I just went 1.5 stars on this. Like, I thought it was below average. It just, I don't know. The Toni Storm shtick's not working for me, obviously. We've talked about that to death, and this was just very much Toni doing shtick, and I didn't think Riho looked particularly great in what she was able to do in this match. So
then we had Lexi Nair backstage interview Dante Martin, and he gets a international title shot on Wednesday's Dynamite, which we will talk about. Then Dustin Rhodes versus Swerve Strickland. Obviously, this was supposed to be Keith Lee. It did not happen. Keith Lee was not cleared. Tony Khan said in the post-show presser that it was his decision to not have Keith Lee in the match. And you put in Dustin Rhodes. And the match was kind of structured weird, because Swerve gets Dustin Rhodes right away. And then Dustin Rhodes comes and works back from behind like a valiant babyface. And then Swerve just wins. Why does Swerve have to struggle with a 54-year-old Dustin Rhodes?
Whose ankle he just apparently broke with, I don't know, the Swerve stomp on the block. I don't get it. This one, it was a weird match to me. And like, Dustin Rhodes is still good, and I wish that he was getting like some level of a push, you know. And what it was, if I recall correctly, they announced early last year that he was entering his last year as a professional, you know, active wrestler. And then he just kind of fell off the face of the earth. And Swerve obviously is great, and this did not work. I thought this was a bog standard match. I went 2 stars on it. I will probably, unprompted, never think about this again.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at. It's, look, this could have been really good, and it just wasn't. Now we have the really interesting 8-man tag. Chris Jericho, Darby Allin, Sami Guevara, and Sting win to bank Sting 25-0 in AEW versus AEW World Tag Champs Big Bill and Abso Ricky Starks and Kinosuke Takeshi and Powerhouse Hobbs from the Don Callis family. This was a fun match, but it was I enjoyed the action. Okay. But it was overtaken by Chance and Chris Jericho about NDAs, and it was hijacked. But the action in the ring was good. It just, because of the whole situation that Nick Hausman started, it unfortunately got taken over by stuff that's was really out of the wrestler's control. And that sucks, but it's just the nature of life these days. Nature of social media and awareness. But I thought the in-ring was good. Ricky Starks took the pin from Daniel Garcia. And I'm curious, they didn't make any mention of it, if Daniel Garcia is going to get a tag team title shot against Ricky Starks and Big Bill.
Do you mean Sammy Guevara?
Oh yeah, it's Sammy Guevara.
It's all right, buddy.
I thought it was Ricky. I thought it was no, it was Sammy Guevara. I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Daniel Garcia was in the opener. It's okay. I just thought this was a really sloppy match. And really weird because of the crowd situation and Jericho obviously being affected by that. I think he did not kayfabe that well at all, and I don't know, man. I just was not into this. I went flat 2 stars on it. Again, another to me average match. Sting, I thought, looked about the worst he's ever looked in AEW in ring. Like, he just is starting to show his age, I think. And
he really didn't do anything.
I mean, he kind of, what he did, like, he countered a jumping knee into a Scorpion Deathlock from Takeshita, and he botched that a couple times. I got that in my notes. I forget what else, because it's been a few days since I watched it, but like, it just, you know, he looked sloppy, I think, and the other guys looked sloppy in this too, so. Like, there was a sequence with Big Bill and Chris Jericho where Bill took a code breaker, but no sold it, then picked up Jericho for an elevated choke and dropped him and then just punched him some, and that looked really kind of messy, apparently. And yeah, I don't think, I think a lot of stuff in this match didn't work, so.
I don't know, I gave it 3.5. I thought it was, I mean, it wasn't the cleanest, but I thought the action was overall good.
All right.
Maybe I'm just on an island, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Next up, I thought stunk. Abaddon and Julia Hart, and thank God we have the house rules gimmick, so biting is allowed.
Man.
This whole house rules thing, please leave it at home. We're, you know, it's not a bad idea, I reckon, but like, it's never, has there ever been a good one, you know? Like a match where you're like, ah, they knocked it out of the park thanks to the house rules gimmicks, so.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to this match. It wasn't very good. There's really not a whole lot more I can say about it.
Yeah, I thought this was like legitimately bad. I went 3.25 stars on it, or 3/4 star. 3/4 of a star, however words work. I'm struggling, y'all. But like, I just thought this was not good. I thought Abaddon, leading up to this match, had at times looked like a pretty decent brawler, and this was not the case. This was a really slow-paced match. Like, at some point, Abaddon was suplexed to the floor by Julia Hart, cool spot, and then just, like, laid there forever. And when she tried to re-enter the ring, just got pushed back to the floor. And, like, it was like, oh my god, we're just doing nothing here. Okay, cool. And then we got the contractually obligated appearance of Ruby, of Sky Blue, who is also spooky. And that helped Julia Hart win. It's just too spooky. There's just too much spookiness for this to be good, I guess. I don't even think that's really it. But, like, I thought Abaddon was given a big, pretty big opportunity here, and I feel like she didn't deliver. And for all the talk about how Julia Hart has improved this year, which, or in 2023, which she did, I think this would not exactly be, you know, exhibit A in making that argument.
Yeah. Look, Julia Hart's a fucking star, man. I want to see her in the ring with some real workers so she can continue to get better at that aspect, because she has grown tenfold as a performer, as a character, and her confidence and charisma is going through the roof, but it's not helping anybody to put a worker that needs improvement with somebody who also needs improvement in big spots. It does not help people to grow and develop. And we'll talk about it more here in a little bit. Like, the addition of Deonna Purrazzo, I think, is fantastic. There was some people on Twitter saying that she was this massive difference maker, and others like saying, no, she's not. I think she is, but not necessarily the way you'd think. She brings everybody, like, the base level up a notch, and she's going to be able to deliver both competent, good, and really good matches, where working with some of these people is going to be a net positive for everybody. It's going to make the quality of the women's work better. It's going to improve those young workers who just don't have enough experience. It's going to help them raise their game. Like, we need more of that. We need more more higher end women's workers in this company that can help with some of these young emerging stars. Like, take a look at Britt Baker. Britt Baker figured out her character. She figured out her persona, her confidence, her ability to talk. She got that ironed out. As a worker, massively inconsistent. But when you put her in a big spot with somebody else who can work, think the Thunder Rosa matches. She can go and she can deliver up to that level. But she's also somebody, she's kind of like tofu a little bit, where depending on what she's working at.
Careful.
Look, I actually use it right. MJF can steal somebody else's gimmick.
If that comes back, Tyler, it's on you. I just want you to know.
Look, I have called Britt Baker tofu before. I have called Ruby Soho tofu. She wrestles to the level of who she's working with. And that's okay to an extent, but it does not help the young workers because you're not helping them get better. And somebody like Deonna Purrazzo, I think, is going to be able to do that. So I'd like to see Julia Hart in programs with those women. Get her in a program with Thunder Rosa. Get her in a program with Deonna Purrazzo. Get her in a program with Riho. Just get her in a program with workers. That's all I want. Get her in programs with really good workers right now. And don't put her in programs with women who are in the same position she is. They need improvement with their work. And I think that's the biggest hurdle right now with the women's division. And until we get that, it's you're going to have these women who hold the title that have everything but the in-ring. And that's not an overnight fix, but she's already shown improvement in-ring. Now you have to help her take to that next level, and that's going to be by working with better workers.
Yeah, and maybe Deonna Purrazzo coming in will help with that. I think she's pretty good. I am not as high on her as, you know, a couple other people I've seen who I do respect, but like I don't think she's like one of the five best women's wrestlers in the world or anything. But I think she's good. And I gotta say, you know, if the Mercedes Moné thing comes true, like it's rumored to, you know, that would obviously only boost it further. And boy, I gotta say, 2023 was an awful year for the women's division in AEW. And one can only hope that we will change that, or that will improve in this year. But yeah, I mean, this was just this was stinky. Probably outside of squashes, which I rate low just because they're squashes and there's not much to them, like as far as actively bad matches.
Squash matches need to be given their own star scale, because there are 5-star squashes that would be like a 3-star match overall. So I'm with you. I like to just kind of view them objectively. Like, well, who did Lance Archer squash that one time on AEW television that was just one of the greatest squash matches ever? That's a 5-star squash.
Yeah. Like, squashes can be good in their own way. But like, you know, just going back, you know, looking at the bottom of my list from last year, like when this was pretty late in the year, but when the Guns squashed the Boys, you know, on that one Collision in late October, you know, I didn't think that was a particularly notable. I gave it 3/4 stars. But like when I do a worst match of the year list, I'm obviously not going to mention that one because, you know, it wasn't really that, you know, it's not really what I would consider fitting the criteria. But it was obviously much better than, I think, Abaddon and Julia Hart. You know, I would rather watch the mediocre squash than the, you know, 12-minute pay-per-view match that was not good. And looking at my list now, this is probably my 4th or 5th worst match of the year off of what I actually put eyes on.
Yeah. Disappointing, but that's why we need to continue to bring in better workers to help these younger talents get better.
You know what wasn't disappointing?
What?
Be segueing into Adam Copeland and Christian Cage in a no disqualification match.
Listen, I want to say this because I don't like using WWE tropes. I loved Christian Cage screwing over Adam Copeland with the trope of cashing in. it wasn't like an actual cash in, because they've done like, hey, I have a contract or whatever before, but they just bring it out and they issue a challenge for like a specific date. Like, doing this to screw over Copeland, considering Copeland was the one who started that whole thing, I thought was cool. I thought ruled, and it fit Christian. So every once in a while, those hit and they work, but I don't like using them in a vacuum. I just thought that worked so perfectly in this spice with this story that it was phenomenal. And I'm really glad that they did it.
Yeah, I didn't love that. Now, I love the actual match. I thought that was a lot of fun. I went 4 flat on it. You know, it was a little slower, but I mean, these guys are up there, so you know, what can I say? They did a fire table spot, you know, with Edge and his however old he is. How old is Edge? Guess how old Edge is. I'm sorry, Adam Copeland. I should refer to him by his Christian name.
Get is the joke he 53?
There. He's 50 flat.
Okay.
Good old, born October 30th, 1973 in Orangeville, Ontario, according to the Wikipedias.
53.
Very, very, fairly damn small town. I was looking to see if I could steal anything interesting about Orangeville off of Wikipedia, and I'm not finding anything like rapidly. So, anyways, back on track. Yeah, I thought this match ruled. I'm going to talk about the match first, and then I'll get to the air quotes here second match. I thought this was a lot of fun. This was the good kind of garbage weapon match that, you know, you'll see at AEW some, like with the a couple weeks ago with the Diamante and Mercedes Martinez against Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander tag. I thought that was another pretty damn fun garbage match. And, you know, I liked this a lot. There was a lot of nonsense with, you know, there was a bit of nonsense, I should say, with the Waynes. And it all works within, to me, the sense of Christian's gimmick, you know, with the patriarchy and everything. Now, I do have to say that I wasn't hog wild over the, you know, the aftermath where Killswitch comes in with his contract he won in the Battle Royal that neither of us watched. You know, just was persuaded to hand it over to Christian. Though that kind of really doesn't make sense. I guess we're going to keep slow burning the Luchasaurus feels betrothed or beholden, I should say. God, I'm struggling today. To Christian. And then Christian just immediately spears and pins Copeland. You know, in a different set of circumstances, this would have been actively bad. Like, if this was the Bertaccio line, you know, I would have, like, probably freaked out. But it wasn't. It was in a storyline where it didn't bother me. And I assume it sets up a third match. Because I can't imagine that they're just, you know, eventually, I can't imagine that they're just going to let that be the end of it. You know, maybe an actual TLC match, though God knows at their age and with their history and neck issues, maybe we don't do that. But yeah, I like the idea. I don't know that I was necessarily in love with the overall execution, but you know, I'm not going to complain about it. It didn't bother me that much.
I went 4.5 on this, Fred. I thought this was awesome.
That's fair.
The story, the interference, the flaming table of callback to that WrestleMania 21 spot with Mick Foley, all just so great. And Copeland almost missed the table with Nick Wayne. It was very close. Nick Wayne's lower back and butt were the only thing that got the table, which actually may have been better for Nick Wayne's health because then he wasn't going actually into the fire. Mm-hmm. But I thought overall,
yeah, that was the bad bump though. Like not getting anything from the table pretty much was a bad time.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
When did Luchasaurus become Killswitch? Was that a pre-show thing and we just missed it?
No, that was several weeks ago. I want to say on a Collision. No, I think it might have actually been a Dynamite, but it was around, I want to say, early-ish November, if my memory is working correctly.
I don't remember this, so I am a wonderful podcast host.
That's all right, buddy.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
I've already made it clear that I am not 100% on this show, so I've corrected to, you know, like, just using the wrong word, like vocabulary failures. I'm just hanging in here, just trying to make it through, which I'm sure is fantastic audio for everyone, but, you know, what are you going to do? Next match.
The AEW, I'm calling it the Triple Crown match for the Continental Classic Finals. John Moxley versus Eddie Kingston. This rocked. And they just threw absolute bombs at each other. And then as they're standing facing each other, throwing bombs, Eddie Kingston just hits Moxley with a back fist. And it's over. 1, 2, 3. I thought this was awesome. I don't know how I feel about Eddie Kingston winning. I think it's really cool. I think it's better for the Strong and ROH titles that they don't change hands because of this tournament. But Eddie just starting to win all of these things is kind of the against his like what his character is. So I don't know how I feel about that. But it's all about the follow-up. If the follow-up is good, and now Eddie's a made guy, how is he going to handle that? Is he going to crater? Is he going to crumble under the pressure? I think the follow-up is more important than him actually winning. And that's kind of what worries me a little bit, because he's always been best as this tortured soul where he just can't. And he can't do this. He can't win the big one. And then he beats Jericho. And then he beats Claudio for the title. And then he wins the Triple Crown. Where are we going here? Is he actually a made guy? These are the questions I have, because it's very different than anything else we could have expected. And I'm just fascinated to kind of see what this means for him moving forward.
Yeah. And what I would, you know, add on here is I've always thought that, like, you should have saved his big singles win, and I get why it was here, because I totally understand the path it came through with him finally, you know, getting one back on Bryan Danielson, who has looked down his nose at him the entire time, and then beating Jon Moxley, his friend and sometime rival. That all makes perfect sense to me. I still, in a way, wish that his win came like the big win, you know. I'm not talking like when he beat, I think, Chris Jericho on a pay-per-view. Not that level of win, but like the big win should have been for the world championship in a Mick Foley-esque angle. Like, I do think that would have been a huge babyface moment, as nice as this was. Maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I'm overthinking this a little bit too much. I mean, I'm invested in Eddie Kingston. I'm a big Eddie Kingston guy. I did like this match, and I liked the finish of it. I have no complaints about that whatsoever. I went 4.5 on it as a match, as a emotional thing. Like, I thought it was put together very well. For Eddie to finally, you know, hit that back fist and everything, and they structured it well to create a lot of drama and questioning about if he was actually going to win it. It just feels like the level is a little low, and I'm worried that You know, there's this thing Tony Khan does sometimes where it looks like a guy can be big and then they just never elevate him. And it's, I think it's kind of happened with Orange Cassidy. Ever since that pay-per-view main event he had with Moxley, where, you know, he got over by losing and felt like he was poised for bigger things than being the workhorse international champion. And, well, a few months later, look where he is. I think Eddie could be like a legit main eventer, like a real big underdog babyface, like even bigger than he currently is. And I kind of worry that that's not going to ever really be given a chance. And I feel like that some money is being left on the table there, and it's unfortunate. But I mean, we also got something that's pretty good. So, you know, I don't know too much what to say. Yeah.
Follow up is going to be big here because of all the ambiguity with what Eddie Kingston is. But great match. I thought Moxley was great. I thought Kingston was great. I thought Danielson was great on commentary.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about Danielson and Moxley here in a little bit because they did wrestle at Wrestle Kingdom 18 this past Thursday morning out in Japan. We'll touch on their matches here. But let's move on to the main event, which is going to transition immediately into the beginning of Dynamite. Samoa Joe is your new AEW heavyweight champion of the world, choking out Maxwell Jacob Friedman in the middle of the ring in a result that we had hoped for, that we had prayed for, that we had begged to happen. And Samoa Joe is now a world champion for the first time since, I believe, 2008. Fred, how excited are you that Samoa Joe is the new world heavyweight champion?
This ruled. Like, the finish ruled. I thought this was a pretty good match. I don't think it was nearly as good as their previous one, but I thought it was solid. I went 3 3/4 on it. I actually like the old school chokeout finish, the three arm drop thing. And I know that he gets some crap sometimes, and like once in a while he can annoy me, but I thought Bryce Remsburg was really good here, actually, where after the third arm dropped, he kind of paused in astonishment that it had actually happened to kind of help get it over and then called for the bell. And I like that little touch. I hear like Joe Lanza talk about how he's a little too front and center sometimes. And like, you know, maybe he is, but I'll be honest. I like Remsburg's personality being able to show through some. Maybe he chills a little bit some and like cuts it down by 25% and it might be better. I don't know. But I like having a ref with some kind of a personality. It's nice. As a match, I thought this was pretty good. It got a little, you know, a little kind of, I mean, MJF obviously wasn't at full power here. Somehow he had not fallen apart, like literally, like just a leg on the mat at some point. But it was a nice structure. It was, you know, again, kind of, you got a little bit of that, like, and I mean this in a good way, the 80s WWF, like babyface fighting back kind of thing that you would get sometimes with Hogan. Only with modern work rate. We got Samoa Joe just like taking out the kangaroo kick immediately and being like, no, we're done with this shit. And just having a counter for pretty much all of MJF stuff. And then the second kangaroo kick counter. He had an answer for everything MJF did. MJF had some surprises. Like the F5 was pretty cool. I liked it. And, it's an overdue title change. Apparently this was the plan the entire time. I would have considered audibling a few months earlier just because of how clearly, you know, how things were falling apart, you know, with health, with everyone, and how the storyline itself was not working, but here we are. And then we got the reveal of the devil as Adam Cole, not Jack Perry, as I thought it might have been as his big return. Adam Cole makes a lot of sense. Can't really knock it, I guess, although there is a lot of, you know, you got a lot to overcome from all the months and months of the Brichacho line that I did not like. But I will say that Dynamite, that was a good first step for me.
It was a good first step. And I'll say this. My favorite spot in the match, the muscle buster to the apron.
Oh, my God.
Was incredible.
That's a finish. And, like, not just, like, a normal finish. That's a go-to-hell finish right there. Yeah, that's a super finish, yeah.
It reminds me when Hiromu busted out Time Bomb 2 and dropped Will Ospreay straight on his head at Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
That's what that reminded me of. Like the aura and style of what the move is, not the move itself. Like,
yeah.
Damn.
I thought that I think in my notes, Joe like covered pretty shortly after that and only got two. I hope they never do that again. The muscle buster either needs to be like a this is over immediately, like a main event finish kind of thing, or else it's got to be like one of those, the guy rolls to the floor and is just too dead to be lifted back into the ring for like long enough to justify getting a foot on the rope or kicking out or something. I mean, but in general, I appreciated the structure of the match. I had pretty much hit like peak MJF exhaustion. That was a very mixed bag of show, though. Like a 5 out of 10 for me, just because there's some stuff that was not good. In fact, one of them really bad. You know, I despite there being some good stuff on here, I don't think there was anything that was even that was really close to like a match of the year level match. My best was Kingston and Moxley at 4.5. But nothing that was up in that 5 neighborhood that I even stopped to think about, like, you know, about possibly being a 5-star match. So
yeah, I think I went 4.25 on the match, which is it was fine. It was absolutely fine. And it's more, it was more about getting to the angle, which you obviously had Adam Cole at ringside the whole match. And then the devil's henchmen come out and start beating up MJF and Adam Cole. And then they're about to hit Adam Cole with a chair and MJF's begging for them to hit him instead. The lights go out. And then Adam Cole's sitting in the chair, head hunched over, and the devil's henchmen reveal themselves as the Kingdom, who are the ROH World Tag Team Champions, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, Roderick Strong, and Wardlow, which I thought was interesting, which it makes complete sense. They revealed themselves on Dynamite as the Undisputed Kingdom, which is just lame as hell. Like, come on.
Not a great name.
The Undisputed Era plus the Kingdom. I'm surprised you didn't try to put in Bullet Club, baby. But the name kind of stinks, but it's fine. It's whatever. But then Adam Cole talks about the whole process, and he tries to talk like it into being good. And like, now that it's done, now it's about how is this going to be good. And I thought what was interesting is everybody's going to chase gold. That's their whole idea of being together. That ROH Tag Team Champions, Roderick Strong's going to chase the international title. Wardlow's going to chase the world title. And when Adam Cole is healthy, he will forfeit it so Adam Cole can be the world champion.
And you got your eventual Wardlow babyface turn right there, right? Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, you could have him win the title. And Cole comes back a couple weeks later from his injury that they've kayfabed at that point, I guess. And be like, all right, lay down. And Wardlow's just like, no, man. And
you know what they should do? They should do the finger poke of doom spot. And then Wardlow, as he's being pinned, picks up Adam Cole and power bombs him like 5 times. And then that's your babyface turn.
Yeah, we need this could be a good, you know, a good return to the Batista face turn from Evolution, you know, that kind of storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I'm doing conjecture here that they'll do a good storyline with Adam Cole in it as a major player, which we just kind of had a year where that did not happen. But, oh boy. Yeah, I mean, I did like this promo. I like Jay White coming out angry, which made a lot of sense after he was kind of nonsensically attacked. I mean, I still don't know why that happened. You know, I can't really give you any reasonable justification for that. And I think Adam Cole had a good promo here as a heel. And Jay White coming out as a babyface of sorts worked for me. And look, I am not, you know, there's a lot of goodwill to recover with this kind of, with the Adam Cole area, but this was the first step. I liked this, and it was preceded immediately by that great Samoa Joe promo. This kind of ruled, to be honest.
I really enjoyed it. Look, now that we have all this, most of the devil stuff behind us, it's about the follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the follow-up could be really good. And I'll tell you, the rest of this show, Fred, gave me hope that it was going to be good. Because this show,
it was a lot better than feeling. The pay-per-view.
It restored the feeling in me. And I am very excited. So now you have all this. You have Jay White and the guns attack the devil and his henchmen, the Undisputed Kingdom, because they attack Jay White. And then when they're starting beating up on Jay White and the guns, the Acclaimed come out and inadvertently save Bullet Club Gold because they were also attacked by the devil's henchmen. By the Undisputed Kingdom.
Yeah, and I thought that worked well too, actually. I think the actual, like, the whole lead up to the World's End aspect of the storyline, like, you know, it ranged from annoying as hell to nonsensical. But I thought this one segment did its best to make sense, you know, out of that nonsense. And it worked pretty well at that. Kudos to AEW for putting that together. Again, arm's length, we will see how this goes. If they can maintain this, you know, that's a whole completely different thing than just one good week. But, you know, it is no longer a comedy-infused storyline. AEW is apparently really bad at comedy. Because, you know, we get these comedy characters that they've created this past year with the Muchacho line, which isn't, you know, there was a lot of attempts at comedy pre-tapes that never had jokes in them that were good. And then Toni Storm, and like, I don't know, I think they need to step away from that, but we've kind of beaten that to death.
Yeah, the only comedy that's really worked in this company, Danhausen.
Orange Cassidy to some extent early on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But like, you know, I don't know. I don't know that he is truly, you know, even early on was a true comedy character. Like they pretty quickly established him as like a quirky character with some comedy aspects. But, you know, never. I don't think he was ever like completely full blown. Comedy, I guess. But yeah, Danhausen, and that's just like straight from the indies. You know, that's just him taking his act to AEW. So I think maybe Tony Khan is not good at jokes. I don't know how else to put it, but signs are pointing a certain way.
Yeah. Comedy is not this company's forte, and that's okay.
Yeah.
As we mentioned earlier, this Dynamite would have an AEW International Championship match. Freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy defeats Top Flight's Dante Martin. This was good. I gave it 3.5, but it also led to the return of Private Party Isaiah Cassidy, and Mark Quinn is back. And they are putting the tag team division on notice. And we say new year, new champs. And that is with Top Flight in the ring. That's with Best Friends in the ring. Look.
Mentioned the Hardys by name, which was...
And the Young Bucks.
And the Young Bucks. The Hardys was interesting because, you know, Zay's been associated with them for so long with Mark Quinn out. Though it also is kind of a threat because we might have to see the Hardys wrestle in 2024. And of course, there was the big upset of by Private Party way back at the start of AEW in the initial tag championship tournament. I thought that promo was solid, not great, but it, you know, the circumstances made it a little better than it otherwise would have been, I think, you know, with the return and everything. So glad he's healthy. Happy to have him back. We'll see how he does in the ring. I think Isaiah has stealthily improved because I remember the last couple Zay plus Hardy six men I watched, like he was doing the work for that team. And in particular, his selling is gotten really good, I think. So,
yeah, I agree. I'm really excited to see what Private Party does because Private Party was kind of brought in as the almost like the pet project of mm-hmm. the tag division. And Mark Quinn's been out for the better part of 2 years. Mm. So now that he's back, I think this could be really interesting and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Do you remember, let's take a look here, what Mark Quinn's last match was?
No.
It was a loss to Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett on the Rampage that aired on December 2nd, 2022.
Oh, so he's only been out a year.
Yeah,
over feels a like year. Like a lot longer than that.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't two, because they just kind of, they were around, but really didn't accomplish much in 2022. They're in that weird Hardy family office and then an Andrade family office storyline that just never really went anywhere. And yeah. Next match. I do want to briefly mention the Swerve and Daniel Garcia promos. Both were very good, I thought.
Yes.
Daniel Garcia did a good promo, and so did Swerve, which is not a surprise at this point. And I think it's pretty apparent that as of right now, they have big plans for Swerve, which they should. I think I started last year's podcasts, like early 2023, saying that they need to make Swerve a world champion by the end of the year. They didn't because, you know, it was the year of MJF, but I feel like 2024 is going to be a much more open year. I kind of hope it is around that title picture. And I think it's time to get him in that position. Speaking of impressing, Mariah May had herself a nice match, but, you know, the person that I actually was very impressed by and want to see more of was her opponent, Queen Aminata. I thought, you know, I thought this was like the worst match on the show, but I'm talking like 3 stars. So like pretty good. But I thought Aminata had herself a nice outing and I would not mind seeing more of her. I thought she was pretty impressive. Mariah was very good too. I'm not like burying her or anything. But I was surprised by Aminata.
Yeah. I thought she was really impressive. I thought Mariah May was impressive. Obviously Mariah May being 6'1". That makes her a very interesting individual in the ring because she's much taller than most of her opponents. Kind of gives me Charlotte Flair vibes in that way.
Yeah.
Just in like body frame, size, and the athleticism. Now, it's weird. I actually think Mariah May might be a cleaner worker than Charlotte Flair.
Wouldn't take much at this point. But
I know. Impressive to start. This was obviously just kind of an elongated squash. I would love to see Queen Aminata more because I thought she did show a little bit. And this division could use strengthening in it in the lower and mid card. It really needs that. So adding a Mariah May was big. Adding somebody like a Queen Aminata that you can continue to grow, I think would be a great touch as well. Look, this was all to set up the debut of Deonna Purrazzo, which we mentioned earlier. And I think it's a big difference maker for what this division is because of everything we talked about and how these young workers need really talented, capable workers to work with. Mm-hmm. And that's what Deonna's going to bring you. I don't think she's going to be a humongous ticket mover. I don't think she's going to be a huge merch seller, but she's going to raise the talent level and skill level of this division. And I think that's a huge, 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 huge benefit. And there's a chance she could win the big title. Like, she was good to really good in Impact. And I think that can translate here.
Yeah, I see her as like that second tier star in the women's division there right now that, you know, she could easily step up to be a short-term champion. I don't think she'll ever be like the focus of the division. You know, she doesn't strike me as on that Jamie Hayter, Toni Storm level. But right below that, I think, you know, I've liked her work before. It's just, you know, it seems like with Impact, she would have a great match. And then it would be like 2 or 3 months before there was talk about her having yet another great match. It just wasn't happening on a regular basis. Look, if they give her a chance and if they slot her up smartly and, you know, start using their women's division a little more smartly, you know, this could be a key signing. At worst, it is good second tier depth, you know, like at that Ruby Soho when she first came in level of stardom.
No, I agree. This is, I think she's a better signing than Soho. I think,
yeah,
she's got a higher ceiling and she's got a
Doesn't have the name value of it just yet.
It's only because she was never in WWE.
Right. That exactly.
To watch wrestling, have a higher opinion of Deonna Purrazzo than Ruby Soho.
Oh yeah. Soho has always been a, you know, like if she hits 3.5, it's one of her better matches of the year.
Ruby Soho is tofu.
Please stop. You've done this once. You've done this once and you're trying to curse us again.
Look, I you know what? I called Ruby Soho and Britt Baker tofu months ago. So I'm not doing anything different. She works to the level of her opponent. She can have
a four-star match.
She can also have a one-star match.
You're forgetting why I'm freaked out by this. And, you know, it's you know, you used it, and then we got a bad MJF promo. And, look, you keep this up, he's not even going to rehab the injury. He's just going to be right back, and it'll be your fault. And it'll be doing the worst, you know, tofu-centric promo possible.
Look, no press is bad press. If we get that bad press for it, we're going to get hate listens.
We didn't get any press. We just got cursed. And it was your fault, Tyler. Your fault.
Fine. That's fine.
All right. We had a Christian and the Patriarchy segment that was a big old promo on Copeland, which was pretty good.
Called the State of the Union.
Yeah. Because, you know, a wedding is a marriage is a union.
State of the Union happens in January every year.
Well, yes, that too. That is also the reference. Going to ignore the Soraya, Ruby Soho, Carly Cameron thing. Darby Allin and Konosuke Takeshita. And boy, howdy, buddy. This was our first great Dynamite match of the year. Like, truly great. Darby Allin apparently still plans on climbing Everest this year and will do this regardless of how many body parts he knocks off bumping around. Dude is
Tony bonkers. Giovanni said he thought he saw a tooth fly out of Darby's mouth.
Boy, I wouldn't be surprised if the whole, you know, the jawline fell out. This guy took some crazy bumps in this match.
God bless Darby Allin.
God, crazy guy. This ruled. I went 4.5 on it.
Same.
Konosuke's a great worker, and Darby, like, he at baseline, he bumps hard, and for this, he bumped insane. Just one of his hardest working matches in that sense. And boy, take it easy a little bit. I always worry Always worry, you know.
I don't blame you for worrying, because Darby is, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, a psychopath. And he does not care what happens to his body. It's his art. God, is he good at it, man. Takeshita was throwing him around like a rag doll. And in the process of that, they managed to do, like, he threw him over his head, and it looked like he threw him with a ton of velocity and force. And Darby just lands on his feet. And it's like, what are we doing? This is incredible. And it was a reminder of what Dynamite is. Wrestling.
The Darby Tope that got countered by the knee.
Darby died.
I did too. And then the super German suplex to set up the finish. Good God. Cool to see Takeshita starting to get a push, like a proper one. It's nice that Tony Khan has figured out that he needs to actually put the guys in the Callis family in matches where they look good, in addition to having them stand behind Don Callis while he cuts promos.
Mm-hmm.
Took a little bit to crack that code, I guess, but yeah. This rolled. Highlight of the show.
Yes, 1,000%.
And then Callis. Go ahead.
I want to touch on something that we missed when we talked about Christian Cage. He thanked Nick Wayne. He thanked Shayna Wayne.
This bit was good.
And he's like, I want to also thank the man who made all of this possible. And instead of thanking Killswitch, he thanked himself.
And he was looking right at Killswitch as he was starting to say that.
You know, planting seeds for the Killswitch babyface turn.
Yep.
And awesome stuff.
Christian is really good.
Can't believe he was wasted for so long. Ah, Christian rules.
Just imagine how much better he'd be with a blue dot over his face, though. I mean, unrelated news, Kevin Dunn retired, finally. We had a four-way to determine the next challenger for Eddie Kingston. I guess the first challenger, technically. Mm-hmm. This was a little bit of a Fire Pro random button match here, with Brian Cage against Brian Keith against Trent Beretta and Hijo Del Vikingo, which is a crazy collection of names. But this was pretty fun. It went 3.5. You know, it just didn't quite have the structure to be a truly great match, but it was good fun, I thought.
I thought it was hilarious when Vikingo did the moonsault off the top rope to the floor. And he hits Brian Cage and almost like bounces off him, and Cage has to just then take the bump.
Yeah.
Instead of it being fluid, because Vikingo weighs 161 pounds. This was a lot of fun. I like Brian Keith a lot, and I'm really excited that he's supposedly, and I use air quotes, signed.
Yeah.
That's kind of the...
I think the speculation is that he's on one of those like sub graphic deals, you know, where like it's a kind of a exclusive paper appearance as far as like the major companies. Mm-hmm. I wish they would upgrade that. And this was, I mean, he had a nice outing here. I think he showed that he's definitely worthy of a spot. So
it wouldn't shock me if you had a full-fledged deal. They just don't want to give him the graphic yet until they're ready to like actually give him some form of push.
Yeah, which and give him the first big win.
Yeah, they've done that before. Wardlow didn't get a graphic for 2.5 years.
Good storyline reason for that, but yeah.
No, yeah, but I'm fine with the waiting on the graphic if you're waiting for a purpose.
Yeah.
No problem.
Speaking of waiting, I've been waiting for this for a little bit. We got the return of Angry Hangman Page, the best Hangman Page.
Well, let's do this. Let's talk about the main event, and then we'll kind of go into everything. Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana versus Daniel Garcia. Good wrestling match.
Yeah.
But the one part that stood out for me wasn't even the wrestling. Daniel Garcia faced off with Nana, and they danced at each other, which that we know the whole story with Daniel Garcia is he's struggling between being a wrestler and being a true entertainer and trying to grasp how to kind of maneuver with those things. So like the match was good. I gave it 3.75, just a really good wrestling match between two. It would have gone 4 stars, but the botch on the table where they fell
that was off unfortunate.
Trying to do the Daniel Garcia's, what is it? The
Dragon Tamer.
He calls it Dragon Tamer. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That that took it down a notch for me. But
really that didn't hurt it too much for me, just because it felt dangerous and like in a way that kind of accented the action. It obviously was a botch. It wasn't great, but it wasn't one of those high level botches where you're like, you know, kind of taken out of the deal. It felt like something that would happen in the fight if you were like crazy enough to put a guy on a table and then try to lock him in a sharpshooter. Like you just would fall off at some point. And I don't know, that worked for me to some extent. I also like that, you know, you mentioned the dancing. It did not distract Daniel Garcia. Swerve tried to do a sneak attack on him coming off that, and Garcia caught him coming. And I thought that was a nice little touch.
Yeah, good match. Now let's talk about the Hangman Page stuff. Before the match, I can't remember. I think it was Renee starts interviewing Daddy Magic.
They were backstage alone, just talking, doing an interview.
Coming to ringside to do commentary for the match, and Hangman Page comes in just pissed off. Now he's just going to kick anybody's ass. Maybe Daddy Magic's. And because he got jumped by the devil and thrown through a car windshield. And
let's go.
He comes out and confronts Swerve Strickland at the end of the match. And Swerve's just like, he's got that smile on his face. Like, all right, here we fucking go. Let's do this. And then they just start throwing bombs at each other.
Yes.
I don't know where this is finishing, because they've already done Texas Death. But this could be a new stipulation to finish off. You know what I would love? The Lucha Underground gimmick, the three stages of hell.
That would be awesome.
I can't remember what they called in the Lucha Underground, but if you've never seen it, YouTube.
Three stages of death, was it? Or something like that?
The Killshot versus Dante Fox.
Yeah, I still need to watch that.
Phenomenal. Just phenomenal stuff. Let me look it up. Hell of War. Three stages of hell.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's on Daily Motion. It's on YouTube too. You just gotta Google it and you'll be able to
find it. Yeah, I just need time. Just need time.
It's 27 minutes, man. It's not much.
It's you do know how many matches I rated for 2023? I made it over this week. I made it over the 1600 match threshold.
Good for you. Now go watch this match.
Yeah, I need to watch this match. There's a lot of older stuff I really need to. But
well, you should watch this match. This would be a good match of the week for Joe and Rich, because I think this could really be what ends up the stipulation for the finish of the trilogy. But I recommend you go watch it, because I think it's going to matter in the course of this story.
That was the show. It was a nice pull apart.
Yeah,
and I liked it. It was a good finish to the show. Went eight out of 10 on the Dynamite.
Same here, 8 out of 10. This restored the feeling in Dynamite. This felt like a Dynamite. Before we go, we got to talk about Wrestle Kingdom. Fred, did you watch Wrestle Kingdom yet?
I have not yet, because previously mentioned, ill this week. Barely got Dynamite done. I thought about watching Wrestle Kingdom last night, and then I went to bed. So at like 8:30. So
I have watched the Wrestle Kingdom, and I'm halfway through New Year's Dash. Look, Wrestle Kingdom for AEW involvement, go out of your way to watch the three way with Will Ospreay, John Moxley, and David Finlay. Going into the match, why the hell is David Finlay in here? But I'll tell you, they worked it really well. It didn't feel like a standard three-way. It was very, very well put together and done. Cannot recommend that enough. Same with Kazuchi Okada versus Bryan Danielson. Awesome. Awesome stuff. I went 4.5 plus on three-way, 4.5 on Okada and Danielson. Look, the card is a good watch throughout. But if you're gonna cherry pick, I'd say the last five or six matches, starting with the NEVER title, Shingo Takagi versus Tama Tonga. Yes, I'm recommending it. Very good.
They had a pretty damn good match 2023 as well. So, I mean, Shingo rules. So,
get Shingo an AEW run. Just have him come over here and just wrestle. Just be cool. Yeah, but no, that I wanted to at least touch on it because it did have AEW involvement. At New Year Dash, apparently, Moxley and Danielson did team with Kazuchika Okada. I don't know what the rest of that match looked like, but that's pretty cool.
Tom Ishii was the fourth man, and TMDK, I think, was the opposing foursome, which sounds like a fun, kind of wacky match.
New Year Dash is the best, but yep. That's our show, Fred.
No, I got to ask you if you watched the match. I didn't watch it, so I don't have a good payoff here. But did you watch the much ballyhooed Kota Ibushi Noah main event? Because
no,
you didn't. Apparently, it's one of the worst matches ever, according to Cage Match.
I'm just gonna trust Cage Match. I just don't have any interest in watching Ibushi look like he's literally dead in a wrestling match.
It's apparently really bad. If you somehow have not heard that, let me just pull it up here. Cage Match 50 worst matches of all time, it's still hanging on there. It is up to 47th, only the 47th worst match ever. At 0.75, that is I guess fractions of a hundredth better than Seth Rollins versus The Fiend. Just edging out as worse, the Sting versus Vampiro Human Torch match from the 2000 Great American Bash. So
that's a bad match I need to seek out.
Apparently he just could not move, couldn't really stand. So
apparently he had a broken ankle.
Yeah. Might have been two. Am I mistaken in that?
It's very possible. I don't know, but whoever let him go out there. Boo.
Yeah. Four people have given this as a the highest rating on this, which was 4 out of 10. And just from the little bit I've heard about it, that seems overly kind. But hey. A couple of news notes before we go, just to do them real quick. Sean Spears and QT Marshall have both left AEW due to contract expiry. Serena Deeb is being hyped for a return. And extremely randomly, Scotty Too Hotty worked a dark match prior to Dynamite on the last one of December. Which, will it lead anywhere? Probably not, but I mean, come on, Scotty Too Hotty, we're going to mention it. So
and they got the music. They got the music. So that's just fun for the live crowd. And it wouldn't shock me if that's part of their strategy going into some of these markets by giving you a dark match surprise so you can be more enticed to buy a ticket, because they need to try and do something to get more people in the building, because obviously they raise ticket prices a lot. And the last year storylines hasn't helped that much, but having a dark match surprise, like, oh, you might get to see someone like Scotty Too Hotty, which it's cool. It's nothing special. And you don't expect anything from a dark match. Dark match is usually just a couple people going in there wrestling for 6 minutes.
Yeah.
But if you get Scotty Too Hotty with the music wrestling for 6 minutes, it's a hell of a lot more fun.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, that is our show.
Yep, that's it. I hope you all had a great New Year. Hope none of you got the creeping crud from a critter that you're related to. And I hope you all have a great week. Tyler, on-air production meeting, real quick. I'm gonna do a little. Good, bad, hungry awards. I think I'm gonna put something together this weekend, and we'll send it out for the tens and tens of fans.
There are dozens of us. Dozens
To vote on it. So give me a little time to not have sore ribs, and I will get that out, and it should be fun.
Yeah, and we'll go over that here at some point by the end of the month, depending on how long we want to keep that ballot open. But make sure, if you want to contact us, email us at hungypod@gmail.com, at Twitter @goodbadhungy, or in the Voices of Wrestling Discord server. 5 stars. Like, comment, subscribe, all the fun things. It helps us grow, and it's free. It doesn't cost you any money, which is the best part. And thank you very much for listening. Adios. Goodbye. Sayonara. Enjoy your weekend.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.